Hello, everyone. I'm Amy Andrus, Executive Director of Inland Rivers Ports and Terminals, and welcome to our bonus episode of Dock Talk. We've entered into our third season of Dock Talk, and we're already extremely busy with all of our listeners, all of our stakeholders and partners. So welcome. Welcome to our stakeholders in the United States and around the world. With us today, I'm so excited to introduce our listeners to two people that are very special to me, Erin Howard, Director of WeWork the Waterways, and Pam Maxwell, Assistant Director of WeWork the Waterways. Welcome to you both. Erin, can you tell us a little bit, just a brief background?
Yeah, thank you, Amy, and thank you for inviting both Pam and I to be on this special episode. So currently I am the director of WeWork the Waterways, which is an educational awareness program supported by the maritime industry under the umbrella of Inland Rivers Ports and Terminals.
And a former educator, right, Erin?
Not in the classroom, but non-formal education. I would go and help schools get programs started as well as do some education in the classroom. Yes.
Perfect. And then Pam, you also have an educator background. Just give us a brief description.
I do. I'm coming on my, this is my finishing up my 24th year in education, and I've been in little snippets of every bit, all the way from elementary ed all the way to college, and also doing some education consulting for about 5 or 6 years.
Amazing. So I couldn't have asked for two more perfect suited people to head up the WeWork the Waterways arm of Inland Rivers Ports and Terminals with your passion, with your energy, and your excitement to want to reach that broader audience, right? And so I just want for our listeners all over the world, you know, there are no greater assets than the employees themselves. And so WeWork the Waterways, Erin, if you could, you know, who are you trying to target within this program and why?
So our mission is to help the maritime shipping and logistics industries make connections within their communities. Those connections can include with students, with educators, and even with each other. And we have even started to invite dignitaries to our events to help connect. You know, you can go in as an employer and talk to dignitaries in their office, but when they come out and see our events in action, it's just a different way of connecting and showcasing the importance of our maritime industry.
And so, Pam, when we talk about your events in action, I mean, who are the participants in these events?
Well, right now our interactive and industrial interactive days have involved like juniors and seniors in high school. And so that's where our program has started this past year. But we are building on that and we are starting to add an elementary program. So we're really excited for 2025 to be bringing on that elementary program and also reaching out to the college level as well. So we have lots in store.
I'm going to totally date myself here, but I remember when I was first entering into secondary education and you know, just kind of like seeing what was out there as far as careers, right? I got that big catalog from the college, and I was like, you could pursue this type of a degree and you could pursue this kind. But you know, maritime was never one of the options, right? So Erin, what are we doing and what are you doing with the program that's helping educate these high schoolers that, hey, there's a ton of jobs out here, pun intended. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think for a long time, educators and even parents have steered their son or daughter towards wanting to and having to go to college. There are so many good trade positions out there, and especially in our industry. So we're trying to open students' eyes to the possibilities in our industry that maybe they don't have to go to college for, that they can come right out of high school. And the real thing we're even trying to expose them to is that in our industry, a good work ethic can and will take them far, and that it will be looked for and it will be rewarded.
And that's so true. There's a spot really for anyone who wants to enter our industry. You know, I have two children of adult age, one boy, one girl, one daughter, one son. My daughter is in law school to go to for maritime law, and my son is in the trades and was actually a terminal operator here in St. Louis. And so maybe secondary education wasn't the path, or university education wasn't the path that he wanted to take. It was the path she wanted to take. But the point is, there's a spot in maritime for all levels of educated professionals. So Pam, what do you see as far as the high schoolers and being able to connect with them and share that message with them that we want you and we need you?
Okay, well, I think that that's exactly what our program does, is reaches out to those kids and lets them know that, hey, we have a spot for you. What I have seen just through, I live next to a Mississippi River myself in a very rural community, and just teaching those kids in the classroom, they don't even know about the river right here in their backyard. So I think what our program does is actually brings awareness to them of an industry that they weren't even aware of, kind of like what you were saying when we got that catalog. I remember that catalog too. And, you know, the maritime industry was not in there. So I had no idea about it either, even though I was in the military, moved around the world and saw different places. I still never put the connection together there. That our program actually brings awareness to them. And actually, I think, and not everybody is college material or wanting to take the college route. So I think that's what our program does. It does is like shows them that there are opportunities and we're here for you and we would love to have you. And it's just it's also a growth industry. Like they can get into this industry on, you know, as a deckhand, but they can actually grow in the industry and become a boat captain. So there's just so many opportunities for them to grow in this industry, even if they do come right out of high school into the industry.
So. And that's such a great point. So Erin, you know, if you think about like some of the children and the high schoolers that do enter into the industry at maybe a lower level position, there's that ladder of success waiting for them. Can you talk to us a little bit about that ladder and what that looks like, what your message is to some of those high schoolers?
Well, I like to tell the high schoolers at every event, my introduction is that I work with about 200 companies in this industry nationwide. And within those companies, I know deckhands and crane operators and welders, but I also know presidents and CEOs and VPs. And many of those at the top level in our industry got their start as an entry level position. And that's where I can tell them that, you know, that hard work ethic, showing up to work on time, doing your job, asking questions, being interested can and will take you far. And I can tell them examples of real life people that we do know. Many of our events, sometimes we'll even get those CEOs and presidents to come and speak to the kids about their career pathway and how they started at the bottom and had that opportunity to climb the ladder.
That gives me the chills when you think about that, because I have been to some of your events when we've seen those high schoolers, and you've got a real touching story, Erin, where one of the participants from the high schoolers actually reached out just recently. Do you want to share a little bit of that experience real quick?
Yeah, we held an event just a couple months ago at the Port of South Louisiana, and one of the high schoolers actually reached out to one of our company participants wanting to know more. His interest got sparked through attending our event, and he took that extra step to ask, how do I get involved? And so we're working on getting in contact with him and hopefully going to have a story shared on our social media. He's really interested in a career in a towboat, so we're working on getting him on a boat early in January, and we'll be sharing that story when we do.
Oh, I just love it. Pam, let's talk a little bit about the voyage to success. So you may have, you know, some high schoolers that are interested in pursuing maritime. One of the goals in the We Work the Waterways program is to provide those options for certification or further training, you know, if need be. Do we have partner organizations, institutions, universities that can assist with that voyage to education and success?
To be an electrician. Yes, Hines Community College did just add a maritime career center on their campus. So we are, I mean, I feel like that we're getting out there. Our industry is getting out there more and more, and people are becoming more aware, and the opportunities are being more open at junior college level to for those kids that do decide to go that trade route, because most students that want to do a trade route, they'll go to a junior college first. So that's the perfect place for us to set up an educational center on the maritime industry. So, you know, some of them, a lot of programs have already been in place, like to be a plumber, you know, they have programs like that, or to be a chef going into culinary arts. But now we have the maritime programs at our some of our junior colleges, so that has opened up some doors for them to learn more. And and then also, if they get into it and they decide they want to go a full 4 years and then come into the industry, they can do that as well. So there's plenty of avenues ways that they can come in.
So Erin, do you want to talk a little bit more about our Voyage to Success and the, and more importantly, the resources that you have envisioned for 2025 to help connect, there's that word, right? Connect the high schoolers with those education institutions.
Yeah. And Amy, just to kind of piggyback on what Pam is also saying, it's not just the students that we are making these connections with. You wouldn't believe the educators who become more informed and their eyes open to new career possibilities for their students, that now once they know about our industry and they're working with these students day in and day out for an entire school year, they can also steer their students towards our industry. These industry interaction days that we have are very, they're powerful. And when you come see it in action, it can move you. It's hard to leave one without feeling a feel good in your heart. But we are working on some resources that we don't want these to just become a one day event. We want students to be able to get information and think about us all year long. So leading into the new year, we're working on one, some posters that can be hung in schools and guidance centers and classrooms where students can scan, want to know more about working in the maritime industry. It will lead them back to a landing page on our website where they can then be connected to our social media to continue hearing stories, or check out our careers page where we have many of these careers listed in the average salary range, skills within the industry needed for that position, and even links to companies who hire. We're working on some student resources where we're creating key cards that they can take or not take depending on their interests, that will highlight different positions or career pathways within the industry. At our events, we even work on not just, we work on some life skills with these students to show them that our industry, regardless of where they go work, that we care about them as individuals and want them to be successful individuals within our community. So for example, one of our stations is an elevator pitch station, teaching students the importance of looking people in the eye, a firm handshake, and delivering your here's who I am within 30 seconds, that elevator pitch. And so one of our key cards might simply be the successful pieces to what an elevator pitch is, so that students can have that to refer back to.
You know, I think one of the most powerful pieces of that elevator pitch station is actually, you know, in that station, you're teaching them how to, within 30 seconds, talk about themselves. But what you're really doing is you're encouraging to think about those positive qualities and attributes that they have. What positive attributes can they bring to an employer? And I think until you go to one of the students and say, tell me why I should hire you, they don't really think about that, right? And I think that in itself is extremely powerful.
And you know that we've found that actually is one of the favorite stations. And I think it's because the students actually get the opportunity to talk about themselves, because after we teach them what an elevator pitch is, then they get to practice it themselves.
Absolutely. So Pam, we've heard all about stations, right? Give us an idea, paint us this mental picture of an industry interaction day and what a station is.
Okay, stations are learning stations that are set up all over, and they're actually set up by our stakeholders. It's not like me or Erin, we're standing there doing this station. We actually get our stakeholders involved. They actually come out and set up the station. Like, we've had the fire department come out, and well, not really the fire department, but the safety for the fire on boats and they actually go in and train safety, fire safety on our barges and tugboats and stuff like that. And so they'll come out and do a demonstration on fire safety for our students. So you'll have at one station, you'll see this big bellowing of fire down here on one end. And then on another end, you'll have some students learning about PPE and other safety issues in the industry and how to be safe on a barge and not to slip off a boat and make sure you have your life vest. And then, of course, like Aaron said, we have our elevator speech station set up. So it's just all of our stakeholders coming together and bringing their industry to us. We have Caterpillar that comes out and talks about their, you know, equipment that is used at our ports and terminals and how you can be a crane operator and run one of these huge machines. So, you know, if a student's interested in machinery or diesel mechanic, there's really not, there's not a career that it's hard to find a career that our industry does not cover.
Right.
And a lot of times we like to ask the students, is there a career that you think we don't have, you know? And we had one student say a cosmetologist, and we're like, no, we have cosmetologists on the boat because these guys are out there for 2 months at a time and they need a haircut. But it's great to hear them interact and stuff. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. And when we're planning these events, we'll have planning meetings collaboratively with our industry partners so that we can plan these stations so that we don't have duplicates and we have a variety of careers represented. And these stations are designed to be about 8 minutes in length. And so they're not designed to just have the students sit and listen, as Pam described some of them. Another favorite is using watermelons and hot dogs to demonstrate the importance of wearing hard hats and steel-toed boots. We have a chocolate chip cookie activity where you take the ingredients of the cookie, mark the map from where it comes from within the world, and then talk to the kids about how these ingredients get to one place so that the cookie can be made. And then give the kids a nice chocolate chip cookie. And maybe now every time they eat a chocolate chip cookie, they'll think about, maritime shipping. We go through a man overboard drill where the kids learn about what happens if a man does go overboard, how to point them out in the water. And then they get to practice throwing the life ring out. We have line throwing and handling, and sometimes our partner Maritime Throwdown comes and does that station for us. And so what's really special about our events is the collaboration of industry partners, our nonprofit partners, others who are, you know, maybe not for-profit, but they see the value in collaborating with us, and the industry professionals as well as the government. It's just a nice collaboration of a community of people working together to showcase our industry.
It is honestly the true epitome of connecting communities. Those that serve it, those that want to work in it, those that are leading the community and in policy and regulation, it is the true epitome of connecting communities. So congratulations to you both on this. Now, so an industry interaction day, again, you know, you could have 200 to 400 students, right? And you divide them up, you split them into smaller groups so that it's easier for them, you know, to kind of pay attention to the different stations. And then they are on a rotation kind of schedule. You want to talk about that a little bit, Aaron?
Yeah. So when we're planning an event, we reach out to schools in the community, and we like to have a variety of schools so that our spots are not all filled by one school. So we typically also reach out to the guidance or career counselor and say, hey, you know, the types of kids, those who aren't quite sure what they're going to do or definitely want to do something hands-on. That being said, when we have 200 plus kids in an event, we know that we're going to have a variety of students. So we do talk about our entry-level positions. We talk about our college-educated positions and even the government positions like the Corps and the Coast Guard. And when they come, we will break them up into groups a lot of times, and we rotate them between our interactive stations, and those stations each get broken up into smaller groups. We also have our presentation portion of the program. We have a presentation that's been developed, and no matter if you're in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, or New Orleans, the kids are getting the same introduction to our industry as anywhere else, kind of that standard messaging. And then depending on each community that we're in, we'll put together some special opportunity. We've had tours of facilities where they get to see things up close and personal. We've had boat tours, tours of locks and dams. Again, it just kind of depends on where we're at and what the local community has to offer.
Right, exactly. And some of these kids, like you've told me so many times before, I've never been on a boat, so it's really actually quite the experience that they get to get out there and see what a towboat actually is.
Yeah, and so we've had towboat tours, but we've also had boat rides on board, like passenger vessels that partner with us, and for the kids to be on a boat, number one, but then a boat that moves, and then during the movement that we're on the river, and so they get to see some of these big equipment and towboats and barges go by, or facilities and ports along that. It really is, in addition to opening students' eyes to career opportunities, we're providing them experiences.
Right.
Yeah, industry in action is what I like to think of it,
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Yeah.
and they do get a free t-shirt. They also get lunch. But the event itself, how much does it cost for a school to actually register for one of your events?
Thank you to our supporters who support this program. It costs nothing for the schools. Everything is provided, and that's really important too in a time that schools just might not have the money for things like this, but they know that their students need experiences. And I've been told time and time again how, number one, our program is one of the best field trips that they take their students on. And I say field trip, and I really mean industry interaction day. But they like how that we break things down at the students' level. They like how we're involved and they're not just sitting listening to people talk all day.
I've actually heard the same thing, not from the educator, but from the stakeholders as well. This is the best career event that they've attended because it's hands-on. It's not necessarily just, oh, here are the positions that we offer, but it's actually showing them in an activity of some sort of what they actually do on the job. We're going to take just a very brief pause, and we are going to come back to our We Work the Waterways team. But we wanted to take this brief pause and introduce you to a new IRPT member. It's the Core Resource Group. As I mentioned earlier, the best assets that our companies have are the personnel and the workers themselves, because without the workers, we cannot be profitable as a business, no matter what your business is. It just so happens we're in transportation. So I want to introduce you to Core Resource Group and the many services that they offer. Hi, everyone. So we're welcoming Mr. Matt Furman, the CEO with Core Resource Group. Core Resource Group is a newer member of IRPT, and I am so excited to introduce you to Matt and all of the service offerings that that Core provides. So Matt, welcome. Welcome to your first podcast with IRPT and welcome to your association.
Thank you. Thanks for having me and thanks for the time.
Absolutely. So you are physically in Texas, is that right?
Just west of Houston, Texas, a place called Katy, Texas.
Oh, okay. We have several members down in Katy, Texas. I would love to just kind of introduce you to those members. Maybe we can have a networking hours so down there the next time I'm there. So that's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah.
So tell me, how did Core Resources, well, first of all, I'm going to date myself here. Back in the 80s, there used to be the store Toys R Us, right? And so you knew every holiday that came around, if you needed to go buy a toy, you'd go to Toys R Us. I don't think you're selling cores. What is Core Resource Group?
So we are a maritime recruitment and staffing organization. We've been in business for 14 years. And we started off doing executive search for marine terminals, vessel owners, class societies, offshore energy companies, and did that for a number of years, and then we got into the contract staffing business. So kind of the USL&H, the high risk staffing of onshore facilities, and then eventually got into the crewing of vessels and ships. and maritime crewing. And we place roughly about 2,000 mariners a year, and onshore direct hire as well, in various executive positions, you know, around the US.
So usually, you know, as far as, you know, business, it's market and demand. Would you say that Core Resource Group was founded because it's so challenging to find really professionals in maritime? As far as the executive search part of it, I guess there's, for me anyway, I'm a compartmentalist. So I say we have compartments of executive search. We have a compartment of vessel crewing and so on and so forth. But you know, when I was going to college there and I was looking through the catalog of offerings of what I could be when I grew up, port director wasn't in there. Is that what you're hearing from some of your clients, that it's hard to find that qualified applicant in the executive search?
Yeah, anytime. So we're comprised of executive search, mid-management search, onshore staffing, and offshore crewing. Any position that has 20 to 50 plus people reporting to it, the leadership and the culture match gets, it becomes high profile. And so what happens is we, finding good people, you can find people with experience, but it's the people that can actually grow the business and create
right.
a good culture. It's kind of the difference where we come in and have to really drill down into what's the culture and the qualifications of the individual. Good people typically are very hard to find. They always will be, because they're embedded somewhere else, you know? And so usually it takes some macroeconomic event or something to dislodge one and so we trade in those marketplaces, but the market is short of good people. I think, you know, obviously we had the 2008 downturn, which slowed some hiring down for entry-level folks. We had some slower markets in, you know, 2014, 2015, and then we had COVID. And so we've had kind of three major, you know, economic events that have really kind of delayed the growth and development of professionals between the ages of, call it, 25 to 45 in the last 15 years.
You know, it's amazing. Last night I saw a TikTok and it was talking about how we should all be scared. If you look at the trades now and who's working in the trades, it's all of these, you know, middle-aged professionals, and there's not too many young professionals seeking out the trades right now. Are you worried about the age group of where we currently are in the maritime transportation, or do you feel confident that we have the ladder of success in motion for them?
I think there's a big problem. I think the aging workforce is a problem for trades. I still think, like, there's been a lot of, yeah, everyone wants to be an Instagram influencer or do some sort of, like, fractionalized drop ship, you know, try to work out of their house, you know, and so a lot of people are trying to make money through the internet rather than going out and putting their hands on things. And I think that's kind of happened at scale the last 10 years. And so there's a shortage on that side for US. What's kind of, like, off one is there's been a lot of breakthrough in the medical industry. So life expectancy has increased. So people are actually working longer. So that's kind of stoved off this big drop off. As well as a lot of immigrants that have come into the U.S. in the last 3 to 4 years have backfilled a lot of the, you know, the trade labor, trade skill gap as well. And so I think with kind of, like, medical allowing people to work and live longer, with some of the immigration, it's been kind of masked, I believe, until this point.
To have placed 2,000 mariners a year, that's amazing. Where do you go to find your entry level mariners to place?
So we have very good relationships with maritime schools around the U.S. We manage the Strategic Sea Lift Officer Program for the Maritime Administration, which is supports the Strategic Sealift Officer Program for Military Sealift Command. So we're very integrated and intertwined in the maritime schools producing these mariners. We also have large training relationships and programs that allow us to take unlicensed people off the street and get them trained up and put them on vessels for OSs and APs and things like that. We have a database here of roughly 600,000 maritime professionals. That's worldwide. That's taken 20 plus years of networking and being in this space to grow that.
So there's something that you said there that caught me, and it's, you know, the relationships with some of those maritime institutions. Do you have clients that will actually pay for training for an entry level, person entering into the maritime?
Yes and no. Depends on how desperate they are, you know? So if desperation calls, then they'll cover the training. For us, we'll actually we'll split the cost of the training with the mariner, right? If they're trying to come in, and we'll work out a deal with them on, we'll cover the cost, we'll split it, and then do like kind of a payback program on the first hitch or two to get them in the machine.
Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of conversation lately about drug testing with the legalization of marijuana. Are you finding it difficult to find qualified applicants that can actually pass those tests?
You know, with the legalization, the Department of Transportation is the Department of Transportation. It's a zero tolerance realm. So there has been a slight increase of people that have popped positive. It's just, if you're going to be in the transportation game, the DOTs, you just don't mess with it. Any type of large tonnage transportation or terminal work is zero tolerance. And so regardless of, there has been an increase. I don't know what the percentage is. You know, it could be like a 10-15% increase. And let's just say your candidate pool pre-COVID was at 100%, and then COVID wiped out about 35-40% of it with remote work, you know, so now you're down to like 60%. And then of that 60%, you're probably, 15% of that might be popping positive for drug tests, things like that. And so, I think the candidate market's been whittled down by like 40-50%.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. That's why we've been super busy ever since. Cause it's, you've got, everyone trying to become an Instagram influencer. You've got the remote work, companies willing to beam 40 or 50 K into someone's living room. Right. And so that puts pressure on employers. And then, but although the remote realm is trying to go away, but there's still roughly 40% of the workforce that's still remote.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, you kind of have the drug stuff. So all of that kind of pulls on the job market availability, and I think that's going to continue to get worse over the next couple of years.
Oof.
Yeah.
So I want to shift gears here, and I want to talk about your crew resourcing. Can you talk to us about what does that look like as far as, I know that there's vessels and then there's others. Talk to us about your crew resourcing services that you offer.
So we got into the crewing space kind of just by request and demand. The crewing market, we cover everything from tugs and barges, limited tonnage stuff, all the way up to 1600 ton and unlimited tonnage vessels, and both U.S. flag and foreign flag as well. What we do is, when a vessel owner is in trouble or like they can't sail a vessel, rather than taking a hit on the day rate, being able to charter that vessel out, not meeting their minimum COI requirements, we can go find the chief engineer or first AEs or assistant engineers needed to, or the QMEDs to run those vessels and keep them underway. Same thing on the deck side, masters, chief mates, second mates, third mate type level workers, and then all the unlicensed. And so I think where we really have been able to help companies is, they run into a crewing issue. Rather than not being able to charge a day rate for that vessel, they'll call us and say, hey, I need, QMed, or I need an engineer, or I need a inland pilot with Western Rivers navigation abilities. And so we basically go into our network and string these needles out of the haystack and drop them into these owners to get their vessels underway. Cause it's cheaper for them to pay our markup than it is to not be able to bill their 5, 10, 20K a day
yeah,
rate.
Exactly. And so as you just said that about certainly the inland captains, because we do have such a huge need for captains inland. I'm already like thinking, oh, I need to contact so-and-so. I need to tell them about CORE, because you're absolutely right. It's better to pay that markup than not have a captain to steer the ship. But I did want to ask you, looking at your crew sourcing services, do you find that it's more deep draft? Like, what's the percentage there of your or your split there of, is it 50% deep draft vessels, 50% inland and barges? What does that split look like?
We're probably 60% deep water, unlimited ton of stuff, 40% inland. And it ebbs and flows. Sometimes we're slanted one way or the other, just depending on seasonality and what's going on in the marketplace. There's already a shortage of mariners. And so it's interesting. You'll see the commercial container side takes off and pulls a bunch of mariners off, and then oil and gas takes off and pillages from the deep water vessels, and then Military Sealift Command can't cruise 17 of their ships because they're getting pillaged by the inland and the oil market and all these merchant vessels that are subsidized by the government to do work overseas. And so there's a lot of it's interesting. It's like squeezing a balloon, like one side, it pops out the other. And so it's always moving. The inland side is obviously, grain season and the seasonality piece, it peaks and troughs. So you'd ask me that question and it could be 50-50, it could be 60-40 one way, it could swing 70-30 to the other. It's all seasonality and where the market's moving.
So leading into this new administration, this new yet returning administration, what we saw during the Trump administration was a lot of emphasis on private-public partnerships. And when you think of private-public partnerships, you think of privately funding public infrastructure. But I would love for us to really look at this from a different perspective, right? Privately operating public infrastructure. You at CORE have the mariners and the professionals that we need to perhaps operate. And what I mean by that is the U.S. Coast Guard right now is currently operating at a 10% workforce deficit, so much so that Admiral Linda Fagan has been quoted in saying, we cannot do the same with less. So not only are they doing the same work with less people, President Biden signed an executive order expanding their authorities to include cyber. So now they're doing more with less. I would love this administration to take a look at a P3 where it's privately operating public infrastructure. So what if our government could contract with CORE to put professional mariners to mark our river system? Because what's happening is the U.S. Coast Guard saying we can no longer maintain the aids to navigation. So we're just going to pull out all the aids. Well, when you do that, your barge lines won't be insured to run a river. But what if we could come to CORE and say they have the mariners, they can do the work. Now let the government pay them.
Yeah, we're actually in talks with a few. We have two other government entities we're working with kind of on the same. It's gotten to the point where they, either ships don't sail and they can't support our strategic, sea lift needs for national security or not. And so you have to change the way you're doing business. And so we are seeing a lot of government entities getting a little bit more leeway on doing work with private companies directly. And rather than just saying, we don't have the people, we can't, you have to get creative in finding. We're seeing a little bits of that here and there. You know, I mean, if you look at like Military Sealift Command, they just tied up 17 ships. And that's our sea lift, you know, mm-hmm. to go to war with other countries. And we can't crew those ships up. It's a massive issue, right? So it's at a kind of a whatever it takes. If it's a U.S. Coast Guard doing inland work, I think there is a call to do one-off contracts, even contract staffing, just to backfill what the where the holes are, just to elevate and lift, and then maybe convert them. So, I would say that government works in a certain way. I think the private sector is very efficient. So I think you're going to see a lot of, you know, if you look at like the Department of Government Efficiency and kind of where this is headed, if you look at, you know, NASA was shut down, SpaceX filled the void to do government work more efficiently. My general gut is if someone like Elon's running a department like that, then they're going to be looking at private sector entities that will be able to add value to continue missions along, I think, in general.
As CEO of CORE, would you be open to changing your name to be Coast Guard Services Are Us? No, I'm kidding.
Coast Guard, Coast Guard On Demand.
Yeah.
ready at strategy or whatever. The Coast Guard, you know, I know they've been struggling to find people. We could definitely help. I mean, there's all kinds of options. It's anything from folding seasoned professional maritime professionals into the Coast Guard on contracts that are not on the government, maybe not on the government pay structure, but you could fold them out. They got another 10 years of work.
We've done the same thing at the Army Corps, right? We have our military Army Corps professionals, and then we also have our civilians mixed in there. Why couldn't we do that with the Coast Guard?
Yeah, that could easily be done. It's just a matter of,
I like it.
It's at the highest level. It's like, well, we haven't done this before. You almost have to have like a change agent from the inside saying, hey, you know, let's do business a little bit different. And rather than going through the process, let's just, you know, whoever at the highest level probably have to set up like a private contract partnership department and then go through kind of like mini RFP processes or something mm-hmm. like that, where they're still checking the regulatory boxes on how funds are distributed, but you can do it in a more efficient way, I believe.
Matt, we're going Inland Rivers, Ports, and Terminals each spring. We go to Washington, D.C., and we advocate for legislation and educate the lawmakers on the impacts that their decisions have on our industry. I hope that you consider going to Washington with me. You and I could make an impact with the Coast Guard Subcommittee of Transportation and Infrastructure.
Let's do it. I have no problem bringing a Thor's hammer right through the...
Yeah. Okay, one last question for you. What's next for CORE and all of those wonderful teammates that you have? Where do you want to go? What can we help with? And what do you want our listeners to know?
You know, I'm a graduate of the United States Merchant Marine Academy. I'm a mariner by trade. I've got terminal experience. I was a terminal operator. We're the largest maritime recruitment agency in the United States. We eat, breathe, and sleep maritime, and we have a lot of resources here. And so, what's next for us is we've actually just developed a product called WorkCORE, which is going to be kind of a request a mariner platform that ties into our database to help, you know, if someone's looking for mariners or terminal workers, they can go into WorkCore and click request and put the job in, and our team will be notified, and we can build intimate pools that they can manage through our network. So that's going live in January.
It's like Uber, but for maritime workers.
So we'll have that live. So if anyone's interested, you know, we would just have to do obviously rate negotiations and get that locked in, and then the ability to request would be there. What else we've got? So our company is comprised of Core Group Resources is like the parent company. We have a Core Group Consulting, which does like maritime consulting for terminals and vessel owners. We also have another group that does maritime litigation support. So what does that mean? So we won the contract representing the port during the Baltimore Bridge collapse. Mm-hmm. And so we're doing root cause analysis, things like that. So we have expert witnesses on site. We have a company called Maritime Licensing Agency that processes maritime licenses for mariners. So anyone looking to get in the industry, we have licensing professionals with over almost 30 years of experience that can help people get processed into the industry. We just opened up an office in Trinidad to do maritime recruitment and support for our clients down there. And then we just opened up another office in Guyana, which is supporting all the oil finds and infrastructure. So while we've always been kind of a United States based company, just in the last year, we've headed towards some of these more maritime robust frontier regions, if you would call it that. Mariner by trade, terminal superintendent, and I've probably placed over, I don't even know what the number is, probably 10,000 people in the last 20 years, you know, wow, through every type of maritime profession you could imagine. And so helping people, connecting people to destiny is our mission, and really being a guide on for people in the industry where the work is. If it's mariners coming ashore that, you know, have fallen in love and or babies on the way, we do a lot of that work, you know, helping them find shoreside jobs to vessel crewing. And we're really good at, I mean, if you get pinned and you don't know what to do and you need someone to figure it out, we are phenomenal problem solvers with people, personnel, projects. And so we do fix a lot of problems when people get into pickles.
I see so many synergies with CORE, the work that you're doing, and our We Work the Waterways program. We are working to encourage and attract those high school students to look at maritime as an option. So I do hope that your pool of qualified applicants increases tremendously due to our program.
Yeah, we have a guy, Ben Adams, who runs. We're actually funded by MARAD to push the high school, the K-12 initiative. And so I got to get you in touch with Ben Adams. Yes. On because we're fully embedded in those programs. And so part of our job is to make sure all these programs are talking to each other. And
absolutely. You know, we would love that. Well, thank you so much, Matt. It was so great to meet you and to learn more about your passion and your energy. I'm so excited to have CORE as a member of IRPT, and I'm so excited that you had the opportunity to talk to our listeners from around the world today. So thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that overview of services that CORE Resource Group offers. And if there's something that I want the listeners to understand, is that transportation and our industry is a reliable career path, right? What we saw during COVID was that we're essential, right? Transportation and the transportation professionals that work in this industry were essential. We have job security. So we have our WeWork the Waterways team that's helping attract the high schoolers to explore more maritime careers. We have members like the Core Resource Group who are actively trying to place the workers into good paying jobs right now, as well as offering additional services like mobile transloading, et cetera. But we want to go back to our WeWork the Waterways program and how you too can help grow this program. But I do want to shift gears because I've heard throughout the past few months, Pam, that the importance of a multiple touch point throughout a student's career is important. So can you tell us a little bit about your vision to reach some of the elementary students?
Well, right now our elementary program is in the works, and we hope to have that program established to where it is accessible to educators, where we can send them a packet. And we're talking about any teacher from kindergarten to sixth grade, and they can take that packet, and it's going to be teacher friendly, user friendly. Some of it will be scripted because it is a new industry. It could be a new industry to that teacher who receives that packet. So it should be something that he can use easily and implement in the classroom. It's going to be integrated, like all the subjects are going to be in there, from math to science to social studies. So your integration's there. But we're hoping, we are starting off, we can do little packets like that, but we're also doing like events at museums, children's museums, where the students actually come to us and are, or to that museum. So we, Aaron and I, might not be there at the museum, but they have an educator in place where the educator can easily take our packet, implement it for whatever school is coming to that children's museum. So you don't necessarily have to be at a museum next to a port. It can be used anywhere, in the classroom, at a museum. But we see ourselves eventually moving that program into maybe eventually being able to send like kits out to our teachers. And this is down the road a little bit, but it was just a brainstorming idea that we've just come up with, where the teachers actually get a crate that has everything they need for all the stations to set up in their classroom. The teacher will open that box. All her supplies are there. All the lesson plans are there. She can keep it for 2 to 3 weeks, implement those things, have fun in the classroom with her kids. And then of course they can pack it all back up, put the label on there, put the zip ties on there, and then ship the crate back to us. So we're hoping to have those kits accessible within the next 24 months.
And it would be phenomenal if we had a grant to help us pay for that, right?
Yes.
A grant, or, you know, if you know of a foundation geared towards elementary students that would help us propel that elementary program forward, to any of our listeners around the world out there, we would totally appreciate that consideration. But Aaron, if you had one shot to, maybe it's a plea to our listeners, right? What's your call to action? What do you need from our listeners out there?
Well, there's multiple ways that people can support this program. And, you know, we are a 501c3. And so, of course, we need funding in order to do these things. We need funding for staff time, as well as to take it around the country and the materials. And so that's definitely one way. But in addition to that, we need people to come out and volunteer at our events. So, you know, even if you only have an hour that day, you could come out and just help serve lunch. Or if you can be there all, you know, in the morning, you could help with bus unloading and directing of traffic. We need timekeepers. We need all kinds of volunteers to make these events happen. Another way that people can follow and support us is just by simply following our social media and sharing it with people who in your audience you think might be interested in what we're doing. Social media is definitely a way that we can reach audiences. You know, we're not a physical location that people can visit. So it's another way for us to get our message out. But I just want to encourage everybody to get involved in some way. Our industry is small, and it's going to take us all banding and collaborating together to get this message out. So we need everyone to get involved.
We do. We really do. So, yeah. I mean, support, follow, volunteer. As far as supporting, any donation from of any size, $25 all the way up to $5 million, we'll take. No, I'm kidding. We could do a lot with $5 million, couldn't we? It's for everyone.
Yeah, that would be so nice.
any further?
Our link and everything is in the description where they can click on our link and go visit and learn more about, you know, our program and mine and Aaron's information's on there. So just feel free to reach out.
And the event schedule is in there as well. We already have, what, 15, 17 events already scheduled for this year?
Yes, for the spring season. We have a wave of events in the spring and another wave in the fall, and we're looking at 15 to 17 events already this spring.
That's crazy. Is that a record? Is that a record amount of events for a season?
I think it is.
And oh,
we continue to grow, you know, as we get more and more supporters involved, and that we can take it to more places and do more.
Yeah, so you've got a few new cities on the roster this season. Milwaukee being one of them. Who else are your new ones? Kansas City.
Looking at Chicago.
Chicago, Memphis. We had the first one in Pascagoula. Yeah, it was Pascagoula. I'm sorry, getting my P cities mixed up. But
In the fall, both Plaquemines and Pascagoula were new cities.
That's right. Oh, yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah.
And so our first event of 2025, though, will be in Vicksburg, February 7th, Vicksburg, Mississippi. And then we'll follow the next week, February 12th and 13th in Baton Rouge.
What kind of growing pains have you experienced, or has it just all been good since we've started?
Of course, there are growing pains with starting new. You know, we had to come up with all new logo and mission, vision, value statement, create a new website and materials, but it's a good growing pains. You know, really have appreciated being under the umbrella of Inland Rivers Ports and Terminals and having that internal support, you know, a team to bounce ideas off of and help share the workload and get things done, as well as the audience that we have been exposed to through IRPT. We've definitely picked up some new supporters and interest in this program.
Any growing pains for you, Pam?
Well, you know, I'm kind of new. I just came on board maybe a little over a month ago. So that, you know, I'm kind of old school. So the technology's been a little learning curve for me. You know, working remote, that's kind of a new thing as well. Even though I've taught online classes for universities, this, you know, sitting for a meeting and doing all our collaboration, that's, you know, a little different from what I'm used to. Usually we sit at a round table and we collaborate, but I'm loving it. And I've loved the new learning that I'm learning because, you know, I just think you should be a lifelong learner all the time. So.
Oh, absolutely. Right. Yeah, I mean, Aaron, you and I are both learning new things every day, you know, from learning Canva to WordPress to, yes. Man, it's tough.
Those are all new programs,
I know.
But we're all growing.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
So it's fun. But they're good learning, growing pains. So I'm just thankful to be here. And I'm just very excited about the collaboration piece. And we even have a advisory committee for our education part. And it was great to meet all them and be able to collaborate and bounce ideas. That's always a good thing. So,
oh, you're not making these decisions in a silo? You have an advisory council?
I do. We do. We do.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Like, I get that question, like, what authorities do you have? Well, I have none. I have a board, right? I don't get to make any decisions.
So it's nice to have them. We actually met with them this morning, so it's good to bounce ideas off of them and them give feedback. And so it's just really good.
Yeah, that's something we didn't mention. We do have about a 20-member advisory council made up of our supporters in the industry, also other partners similar to IRPT like AWO and WCI. Our members from those organizations are on the board. And we even have an educator, Dr. Terrence James, and a former educator, Kelly DeMarco, who is now involved in government, but to have their perspective on this board or council is great, especially since we're an education program. So to have that team to run ideas by and help us continue to grow, expand, and take this program further, it's great.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. And I wanted to go back, Pam, because you said that you're new, you know, in the past month or so, but you're not new to maritime. You're a lifelong river lover. So I just want to make sure everybody, all of our listeners knew that.
Yeah, that is true. And to be honest with you, I actually met Aaron through this industry, like, I think 14 years ago. And so she and I reconnected back in September up in Memphis. So, you know, it's just awesome to reconnect with her, and it just so happened that y'all needed someone to come on board. So,
welcome aboard.
I'm new to all the new technology stuff.
Exactly.
So
Erin, I want to thank you for my WeWork the Waterways pullover. Definitely want to encourage anybody that may be listening or watching, if you want to get your very own WeWork the Waterways merch, the link is in our description. All of the proceeds go directly right back into the program for further outreach to both the elementary and the high schoolers. So definitely want to just thank you for considering supporting us through your monetary donations, through following WeWork the Waterways on social media, and volunteering your time if you can make it. Don't forget to check out all of our information, all of our events, how to support, how to get your gear, how to contact Aaron and Pam, all of which is in the description. Thank you both so much for your passion, your energy, your excitement for this program, and your willingness to share with our listeners.
Yes. And if you see one of our events somewhere and you're in that area and you want to come check it out, just, we'd love for you to volunteer.
Come on down. That's right. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So today we are here at the WeWork the Waterways event. This event is for high schoolers, so we're just trying to get a little awareness for other pathways if college may not be that number one interest. We've got people who say they want to be welders or they want to be engineers. You can do all that stuff right here on the water, so just trying to give them a different avenue.
We have over 12 schools in the area who are in attendance, over 400 students between the next 2 days, and we have many partners and businesses who are here supporting this program and interacting with the students.
I think it's an awesome event for people who don't know the opportunities beyond college. So this is like another career opportunity that you can make a lot of money without getting a degree.
My favorite part was probably the Louisiana Cat Simulator. Yeah, that was pretty fun driving the trucks and, you know, getting that experience.
Just want to thank all the companies who are involved in this program. Not only do we get their financial support, but it's the in-kind contributions, attending these events, and all the background help. It is the people who make this program work.